Welcome to the Vanderbilt University Center for Teaching podcast, part of the center's efforts to cultivate dialogue about university teaching and learning among faculty, students, and staff. I'm your host, Derek Bruff, an assistant director here at the Center for Teaching. In this episode, we feature excerpts from an interview with Duco Jansen, associate professor of biomedical engineering here at Vanderbilt. All undergraduate students in the Vanderbilt School of Engineering are required to have laptops that meet certain specifications. In this interview, Duco describes some of the ways he takes advantage of this policy by having his students use their laptops during class.
Okay, so the courses in which I use laptops are purely courses in biomedical engineering, and mostly that's done at the undergraduate level, although I do use it at the graduate level as well, but there it's really more a computational tool than an educational tool. As far as the undergraduate courses, I have a lot of experience using laptops, especially in a freshman class. I've been teaching for, I think, 6-7 years now. It's a freshman seminar type course where we expose our freshmen to a specific aspect of biomedical engineering, so they have something to kind of, first of all, get excited about and learn a little bit about their major, in addition to all the basic science courses they teach. So that class lends itself particularly well to the use of laptops. For one, when they walk in as freshmen, the students are still very malleable, and they are excited. They have their new laptops. In engineering, we have a mandatory laptop program, so each student has to have a laptop. Although we've kind of gone away from having all those laptops being the identical ones that we used to do in the beginning, because I don't think that really was sustainable anyway, because after a week, you know, people mess things up and they're not the same anymore anyway. So let me talk about that class in particular a little bit. From a didactical point of view, the whole course is very much built on the legacy cycle, the how people learn, you know, the process of inquiry, posing a question, brainstorming, getting information from experts, and then kind of closing that loop, going public. So that particular model in a freshman class on a topic that they in the beginning know absolutely nothing about lends itself very well to the use of laptops. I started using this kind of thing in particular on the initial phase of brainstorming with the what I consider the precursor of using laptops, which is the clickers, you know, the ABCD Who Wants to Be a Millionaire game show kind of thing in the classroom. And there you can pose a question and you can generate 4 or 5 different possible answers and have the students pick. But what I found limiting in that is it's not an active process of brainstorming on the students' part. They pick an answer that somebody else has formulated for them, rather than really engaging in the creative process of you know, coming up with ideas, generating ideas, and being able to put that down and compile that. So that's the first step where I found it extremely useful, again, in sort of the didactic generate ideas part. Secondly, I use the computer in the classroom also as a tool. A number of things I do. So this class I'm teaching is on laser vision correction, and we kind of go, the grand challenge I pose in the very beginning is, how are you going to fix your mom's eyes if she wants to get rid of her glasses or contacts for good? And that's the grand challenge. Our first day of class, I pose that question to the students and I let them brainstorm, and you get a wonderful, you know, spectrum of very good answers and very unrealistic answers. But that's okay, you capture that. In the class, also throughout the semester, I use the computer, the laptop, as a tool to do simulations, rather than me getting up in front of the board talking about, you know, this is refraction in the eye, this is how light refracts. I actually have them do virtual experiments using applets that are available either written by us or by others, compiled on the Oak website. And they kind of arrive by doing an experiment at the conclusion that there is a particular relationship between light coming in and light leaving the eye. So there, you know, there it's almost an experimental tool where I can do that and have them go through this discovery process in a way that would not be possible to do in a lab, because we simply don't have the space, the equipment, you know, it's a high cost kind of thing to do that. And so there it's also a very useful thing. And then quite often I kind of tie it up at the end, I almost always at the end use our laptops to pose some probing questions on the concepts we've covered that particular lecture. Throughout the semester, I go back to the original grant challenge. You know, now that we've covered this, what do you think about mom's vision correction at this point? I do that 4 or 5 times throughout the semester. And I always have a question in there, sort of a, you know, traditional muddiest point analysis. What was the most confusing thing in today's class that we went through? And I capture that, and that's a starting point for next time. So that's one model to use it, and I find that to be fairly effective. The advantage of having students doing this brainstorming, generate ideas part using laptops is that you get more participation. Because otherwise, if you just open it up for answers and discussion, generally speaking, the discussions has a tendency to be dominated by, you know, the more outspoken students who are the ones raising their hand or, you know, are willing to go in discussion or disagree. And, you know, you always have a number of students who are just sort of sitting quietly and won't say anything unless you call on them. And I don't really like to do that anyway. And even if you do, then they're uncomfortable and they won't say much. And so the fact that everybody gets to submit their responses, it's anonymous to a large extent, at least to each other. I mean, obviously I know which student is answering which question. You know, so in that sense, you get, I think you get more participation of all the students if you do it in that particular fashion. So the question of you know, why do it in class versus assign it as an out-of-class kind of exercise, using simulations, you could do both. So, and I, in fact, I do. You know, some cases I do assign it as an you know, go do this at home and come back. This particular class, it's a freshman seminar, it meets once a week, and if I send them off, so bottom line is the time between meeting periods is a week, you know, and we only meet, 15, 16 times during the semester. So if I send them off with a task that they have trouble with, and especially freshmen who haven't quite figured out that, you know, they can actually come and bug me during my office hours, and they come back the next week and they couldn't figure it out, or they did it all wrong, you know, now you send them back and now you have a 2 week lag time, and in the meantime you sort of moved on. So, you know, in that particular case, I just find it useful to have them do it in the classroom. And to some extent, you know, it's also a process, and again, this is probably unique to the freshmen more than anything. Yeah, they're still, some of them are incredibly sophisticated with and you know, well versed in the use of computers, and others are just learning. Okay, the challenges of using laptops in the classroom are, some of those challenges are, I would say, not unique to laptops. It's the challenge of, you know, how do you keep students engaged in a classroom, in what's going on in the classroom. And the way I look at it, that's no different than, you know, how do you prevent or limit the number of students reading The Hustler or solving the New York Times crossword puzzle. I will say that having the laptops there, having them on and open, I'd probably say the barrier to start to engage in other activities that have nothing to do with what's going on in the classroom, whether it's, you know, getting on Facebook page or email or, you know, working on other assignments, I think the threshold to start to do that is probably lower with the laptops, because I'm sitting on one side and they're sitting, you know, either in a regular classroom setting or even in a sort of circle kind of setting. You know, the laptops are open and I have no idea what they're doing on those laptops. There's software, I've played with it, there's some software that actually allows you to pull up what each laptop is looking at a given moment in that classroom. Sort of the ultimate big brother scene, I guess. I found that to be not very practical and useful. My philosophy in those things is, first of all, these students are there because they want to be there. They're adults or almost adults. They or their parents pay money to be there, and I'm not going to babysit them. At the same token, the burden is on me to make sure that we do stuff in that hour or hour 15 minutes that makes it worth their while. Does that mean that everybody's always paying attention in my classroom? No, of course not. But I'd say to a large extent, that the students are engaged. And again, it's easier with a smaller class than it is with a bigger class, because there's sort of the factor of, he can't see me and I'm anonymous, which is less so the case in the 20 student class, where, pretty quickly all the students by name. And so there's that issue. Also, the use of the laptops throughout the class period, I find actually, and again, this is not specific to the laptop, could be done for these, and actually is being done for these clickers, their systems as well, is it breaks up the class period. There's plenty of studies that show people cannot pay attention more than, 10, 15, 12 minutes or so, if that. So every now and then, to sort of stopping, pausing, posing a question that they actually have to think, and either enter with keystrokes an answer, or push a button to click an A, a B, or C, that very fact, it sort of breaks up the monotony, or at least the flow of the class, and it forces them to do something different, at least move their arm and click a button. That's the kind of thing that also I find useful. That sort of offsets the potential of students actually engaging in other activities using laptops. I tell these students that sometimes there's times where we don't need the laptops. It's not that I'm teaching with everybody with their laptops open all the time. There's places and times for that. Sometimes I tell them, okay, today we don't need it at all. Or sometimes it's like, okay, we'll wait till the end of the class before we do anything with laptops. Or we do it in the beginning and we're done, and laptops closed or laptops away. And this is, again, coming back to my previous comments, most students don't really use laptops for note-taking anyway, because if they do, then, of course, that's a little bit different. But my experience has been that's really not an issue. But in general, I think, the way to get started with something like, either whether it's clickers or laptops, is to have a plan. I mean, you have to figure out a way and decide that there is a particular something you do in the classroom where doing that with a laptop can actually be beneficial, whether that's in terms of providing real-time feedback, or engaging the students, or using it as a virtual experimental model where they can do virtual experiments in the context of the classroom. If you don't have the lab facilities available, and scale that up much easier. But there has to be a rationale for using the laptops. I would strongly advise against just starting to use laptops for the sake of using laptops. I mean, that's a disaster waiting to happen, because why would you want to do it? Because there is definitely a cost associated with doing it. It takes work up front in terms of preparing for how are you going to use it, when are you going to use it, what are you going to do with the information you get from using it in the classroom, how is it beneficial for you as a teacher, how is it beneficial for the students, and if you can't really answer that question, then probably shouldn't be using it. I think, there's definitely a place for it in certain courses, and there's other courses where it's just not, it's not useful. So you have to kind of look at it each case separately. I can easily envision, somebody in arts and sciences doing, deep philosophical discussions with a group of 10 students, that the laptops would, using laptops would come dramatically in the way of people being able to express their thought processes and discuss with one another. But the same token, if there's things like, some things I've mentioned before, you know, that could be a real utility to it.
That was Duco Jansen, Associate Professor of Biomedical Engineering, describing some of the ways he has his engineering students use their laptops during class. For ideas about using laptops in the classroom in other disciplines, see the show notes for a link to the online version of Enhancing Learning with Laptops in the Classroom, Volume 101 of the New Directions for Teaching and Learning series of books published by Josie Bass. The show notes also link to a description of the Legacy Cycle that Duco referenced in his interview. The Legacy Cycle is a challenge-based instructional methodology based on research on how students learn. You can view the show notes, as well as leave comments or questions about this episode, by visiting blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast. If you've used laptops in your classroom or have ideas for doing so, we encourage you to stop by our website and join the discussion. Vanderbilt instructors are also welcome to call the Center for Teaching at 322-7290 to arrange a meeting with a CFT teaching consultant to discuss ways to use laptops effectively in their teaching. Thanks for listening to the Vanderbilt University Center for Teaching podcast. Please join us for future episodes by visiting the podcast's homepage, blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast, or by subscribing to the podcast through iTunes or a similar program. I've been your host, Derek Bruff.